Niraharamani Shinaha Pardhitva Turasanam Tannirannasya Vardhate. Ladies. Indriyani Jyantyashu Niraharamanishinah Parjayitva Turasanam Tanniraha Siddhartate. Indriyani, the material senses, Jayanti, they conquer, Ashu, quickly, Nirahara, those who restrain the senses from their objects, Manishinaha, the learned, Varjayitva, except for. To, however, rasanam, the tongue, tat, its desire, nirannasya, for one who is fasting, vardhate, increases. By fasting, learned men quickly bring all the senses, except the tongue, under control, because by abstaining from eating, such men are afflicted with an increased desire to gratify the sense of taste. Purport. In South America, there's a saying that when the belly is full, the heart is content. Thus, one who is eating sumptuously is jolly, and if one is deprived of proper food, one's appetite becomes even more voracious. An intelligent person, however, does not fall under the control of the tongue, but rather tries to make progress in Krishna consciousness. By accepting the remnants of food offered to the Lord, prasadam, one gradually purifies the heart and automatically becomes simple and austere. In this connection, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur states that the business of the tongue is to gratify itself with the varieties of flavor. But by wandering in the 12 holy forests of Brajamandala, Vrindavan, one can be freed from the 12 flavors of material sense gratification. The 5 principal divisions of material relationships are neutral admiration, servitude, friendship, parental affection, and conjugal love. The 7 subordinate features of material relationships are material humor, astonishment, chivalry, compassion, anger, dread, and ghastliness. Originally, these 12 rasas, or flavors of relationships, are exchanged between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entity in the spiritual world. And by wandering in the 12 forests of Vrindavan, one can re-spiritualize the 12 flavors of personal existence. Thus, one will become a liberated soul, free from all material desires. If one artificially tries to give up sense gratification, especially that of the tongue, the attempt will be a failure, and in fact one's desire for sense gratification will increase as a result of artificial deprivation. Only by experiencing real spiritual pleasure in relationship with Krishna can one give up material desires. Om Ajnana Tinirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Miditam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kodav Mahyam tathati shapadantikam. Vandeham Sri Guru, Sri Jata Padakamalam, Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha, Sri Rupam Shagrajatam, Shahagana Raganatan Vitam Stam Sadivam, Shadraitam Shavatutam, Parijana Sahitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Sri Radha Krishna Padam, Shahagana Lalita, Sri Vishakhan Vitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhau, Dina Bandhau Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostute. Tapta Kam Shana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Prishabhanu Sute Devi, Anamami Hari Priye. Vansha Kalpitarubhyascha, Kripa Sindho Vyevacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Sri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Indriyani Jayantyashu Niraharas Manishina Vajrayatva Tu Rasanam Taniran Nasya Vardhate. Nirahara means fasting. Fasting means not only not eating food, but denying the senses their usual gratification. So fasting for the ears means not hearing. Fasting for the eyes means not seeing. Pratyahara. In the yoga system, one of the eight steps is pratyahara. Ahara means eating, and prati means the opposite of eating. Withdrawing the senses from the objects of sense gratification. The fasting program, not eating, also makes the senses tamer. When one eats very sumptuously, all the senses get fed and feel powerful and therefore present their demands to the mind with great force. I'm this sense and I demand my gratification now. But when one fasts, the senses naturally become less powerful and therefore easier to control. Therefore, periodic fasting can be helpful for spiritual life. Manakadashi, twice in a month, we observe fasting, either complete fasting, partial fasting, but not the full-on usual program. So it's meant to reduce the power of the senses. And so on some other days, like Gaur Purnima, Janmashtami, fasting. Of course, too much fasting is not recommended. The Ashastra Vihitam Gauram Tapyante Ye Tapojana Dampahankara Sanyukta Kamaraga Balandita Karshyanta Shirirastam Bhuta Grama Machetasaha Mam Chaivanta Shirirastam Tam Vidyasura Nistrayam. in the Bhagavad Gita, maybe it's the 17th chapter. Yeah. Those who undergo horrible penances, not recommended in Shastra, out of pride and false ego, and lust and attachment. Karshayanta shirirastam, torturing the body. And mam chaivanta shirirastam, torturing me also within the body. Those people you should know to be demons. Just Hiranyakashipu. But nowhere in Shastra is it recommended that you stand on your toes for hundreds of years to become immortal. But he did it. So that was demonic. It gives pain to the Lord to see the foolish living entity torturing himself in such a way. Well, that kind of fasting is not recommended. Fasting for some political purpose or some other motive. But as recommended in Shastra. Generally, yuktaha raviharasya yukta cheshtasya karmasu yoga bhavati durga. By not eating too much or too little, one becomes freed from all miseries by practicing the yoga system. So a little faster, but not like Hiranyakashipu. That's not our point. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would see that devotees were undergoing some sort of severe fasting regime for health or whatever. He didn't approve. He approved of the devotees taking Krishna Prasada. Sensibly, moderately. That's our program. Indriyani Jayanti Ashu Nirahara Manishina. Manishina means thoughtful, learned persons, devotees. They quickly conquer the material senses by denying the senses, material sense gratification. The modern psychologists or others would like us to believe that if you don't indulge your senses, you'll go mad. That the senses demand gratification and you have to gratify them. And the more you gratify them, the more content you'll be. But from Shastra we understand that the more we gratify the senses, the more the senses become unruly and want more. When we, especially sex life, one thinks that without that control in sex life will mean that sex life will just go wild. No, going wild with sex life is what makes sex life go wild. The more one indulges in sex, the more one wants to indulge in sex. But by celibacy, by self-control, the senses become more peaceful. And the more one observes celibacy, the more one can observe celibacy. The big problem sense, it's said here, is the tongue. All the senses, varjiyat vatu rasanam, except for the tongue. Dharma je jivati logamaisadu, that greedy tongue. It wants to eat more and more, taste more and more, and it wants to speak all rubbish also. So the tongue is very difficult to control simply by denial. Very hard to control the tongue. The recommendation, therefore, is that the tongue should be purified by proper engagement. All the senses, sarvopadi vinir mukta, all the senses should be purified by Krishna consciousness and engaged in Krishna's service. They should be, we should observe complete fasting from material activities and be fully engaged in the service of Krishna. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives a comment very nicely that there are 12 tastes in the material world. Rasana means tastes, and it also means relationships. There's a taste that one gets from a relationship with a friend, with a family member, so on. So those tastes keep us in material existence because it's in relationship to this body. But by circumambulating or wandering around in the 12 forests of Vrindavan, one loses one's taste for the 12 tastes of material relationships. That doesn't mean that we should now all book our plane tickets, head for Vrindavan, and wander around. First of all, we can wander around Vrindavan by reading Krishna book, by reading the pastimes of Krishna. Krishna is wandering around Vrindavan, sometimes in Talavan, sometimes in Gulavan, sometimes this man or that man. He's wandering around performing his pastimes. And by reading Srimad Bhagavatam, by reading Krishna book, we're also wandering around with Krishna in his travels through Vrindavan. Otherwise, if one actually goes to Vrindavan, if one at all wanders around, one should wander around in the association of pure devotees. Simply to wander around Vrindavan is not recommended. There's so much nonsense also that we can find in Vrindavan, or they can find us in Vrindavan. The real wandering is to wander with the pure devotees. Krishna book means wandering around with Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan as Krishna is performing his pastimes. And then we get a taste. We experience how tasty Krishna's activities are in his dealings with his servants, in his dealings with his friends, in his dealings with his parents, in his dealings with his wives, in the dealings with the gopis. All of these things we can taste. Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamalaya. All the rasas are there in Srimad Bhagavatam, and one can taste them by regularly hearing in the association of devotees. Then the mind becomes very much pleased. Yes, the mind becomes very much pleased. Kritkarna Rasayana Kata. And the interest in material relationships disappears. Or the materialists, they like to go see movies, read fiction, and there's some relationship between, the hunter and the hunted, or between the cops and the robbers, between the boyfriend and the girlfriend, between this party and that party. There's so many relationships and it's so engaging. But when one gets a taste for the relationship with Krishna, then these material relationships, whether on film, in fiction, or on the street, become uninteresting. The material relationships are no longer attractive. The shadow of the real relationship is no longer attractive to those who've gotten a taste for the actual relationship with Krishna. The tongue, therefore, should be engaged in speaking about Krishna, vibrating Hare Krishna, vibrating Krishna Katha, and honoring Krishna Prasadam, the food that's offered to Krishna. And the that way, the tongue, at the same time, it will be fasting from material topics, material eatables, material tastes, but it will be satisfied by the taste of Harinam, the taste of Krishna Katha, and the taste of the food offered to the Lord. In this way, one becomes nicely situated. Okay, some questions.
It seems to me sometimes with the senses that the mind is not honest somehow or other.
No, mind is not honest.
I just wanted to know, Maharaj, how do you develop an honest mind?
How do you develop an honest mind?
Sometimes I told you, yes, this is...
I'm trying to think of an honest answer. Mantra, the mind has to be delivered from dishonesty by chanting. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says the mind should be beaten also. 100 times in the morning with a shoe, 100 times in the evening with a broomstick. The dishonest mind should not be trusted. Oh, it has to be tamed and made honest by chanting Hare Krishna. Is that okay? No?
Sometimes you actually believe it's like telling you, no, all right, don't worry. You succumb to it somehow. But other times you think, what are you doing to me? What are you doing to me? But 99% of the time you say, you're falling prey to the mind. It's like two voices inside your head, you know. One voice is saying, yes, this is right, and another voice is saying, you know, that's wrong.
Evam buddhi, evam buddhe, buddhva, samstabhyatmanamatmana. Third chapter. Evam buddhe param buddhva samstabhyat manamatmana. Jahi shatrum mahabhao kama rupam durasa. Higher than the mind is the intelligence. The mind is notoriously untrustworthy. And therefore, because it becomes contaminated by material desires. Therefore, the mind is to be controlled by the intelligence. Evam buddhe param buddhva samstabhyatmanamatmana. Once you control the mind by higher intelligence, Krishna consciousness, and in that way, control the mind and conquer over material desire. The mind just goes, says, sometimes yes, sometimes no, sometimes yes, sometimes no. But the intelligence analyzes, especially spiritual intelligence, by reading Srimad Bhagavatam, practicing Krishna consciousness. We develop our spiritual intelligence. And spiritual intelligence can analyze, what is this? And then it's not just a voice speaking to us, but there's intelligent direction. And intelligent direction controls the mind.
Even once intelligence makes up its mind as to what's good, and still the mind sometimes wins. So is it just a case of...
Therefore one has to strengthen the intelligence. If the mind is sometimes winning over the intelligence, that means intelligence is weak.
Well, the intelligence knows what the right thing is.
Yeah, but it's, you may know, but if you're weak, Just like Dhritarashtra, he knew, I know that I'm favoring my son too much, but what can I do? He's my son. He was weak. He knew, but he was weak. So one has to strengthen the intelligence. We speak about empowerment. One has to empower the intelligence and not empower the fickle mind. The power should be transferred from the mind to the intelligence. When the mind is in control, well, the mind gives in to the senses. Then really the senses are in control. That example, the horses are running amok and dragging the chariot. The driver's lost control. The passenger's in panic. So the intelligence has to take control. The driver has to take the reins firmly in hand, control the horses. So the intelligence should be strengthened. This Prabhupada considered it important for us to read these books because it strengthens the intelligence. Or discussing among devotees, Krishna Katha strengthens the intelligence. Acting with intelligence also strengthens the intelligence. Following the directions of someone who's more intelligent strengthens our intelligence. If I'm not intelligent or very intelligent, then I should follow, I should at least have the intelligence to follow the intelligent. Then you become intelligent. I may not be very intelligent, I'm maybe a fool, but if I follow the intelligent, then I have good intelligence. And I may be very intelligent, but if I just follow my own mind, then I become a fool. By following the intelligent, by strengthening the intelligence through Krishna philosophy, by purifying the intelligence by Harinam, by using the intelligence in Krishna service. If you misuse the intelligence, also it becomes polluted. You can use your intelligence to think, well, how can I get closer to that girl without it looking like I'm getting closer to that girl? Well, that you can start scheming and using your intelligence in different ways. Well, if we, and you know, I could write the novel, but that's intelligence. But what kind of intelligence is it? It's polluted intelligence. It's materially contaminated intelligence. So the more we use our intelligence that way, in the modes of passion and ignorance, the more the intelligence also becomes unreliable. Indriyani. No, what is that? Indriyani mano buddhir asya tishtanam uchyate. Vimohayati esha. Let's see. Indriyani mano buddhir asya tishtanam uchyate. Etair vimohayati esha. Gyanam avritya dehinam. The mind, the senses, and the intelligence becomes sitting places for lust. And through them, lust bewilders the conditioned souls. We think we can rely on our senses. We think we can rely on our minds. We think at least we can rely on our intelligence. But they can all be contaminated by the enemy in the form of lust. They can all, the enemy can occupy the positions. And through them, just like, you know, the enemy compromises one of your advisors, and then you think you're getting good advice, but it's actually being fed to you by the enemy. We think we're getting good intelligence, good advice from our intelligence, but when the intelligence is occupied by enemy forces, then the intelligence becomes unreliable also. So one has to purify the intelligence by following superior intelligence. And the intelligence of Krishna is found in Bhagavad Gita. Intelligence of the acharyas is found in Srimad Bhagavatam. Intelligence of the spiritual master. Intelligence of advanced devotees. Yes.
My question is about fasting for children.
About fasting for children?
Yes. What age?
Sounds like a book title. Yes?
At what age a child should be encouraged to fast?
Child rearing is really beyond the range of my expertise. Little children, of course, should not be required to fast. They should always be taken care of. They should eat nicely. When they're a little older, then they can think about fasting. I think for that you need to consult someone who's experienced in training children. I have zero experience in the matter. Certainly below the age of 5 years, children are just puppeted animals. So the little animals shouldn't have to pass. Above that, you can consult someone who knows. Definitely sounds like a book title, Fasting for Children. Maybe I'd write the next book in the series, Fasting from Children.
Putting myself on the spot to think. Krishna consciousness doesn't mean, please correct me if I'm wrong, that we have to be grave all the time, that everything has to be really super austere. So the question I just want to ask, when we have auspicious days like Krishna Jamashtami, Gaurav name, and there's lots of preparations, and there's more than one or five. I'm using the word indulge loosely, that might be mistaken wrong. Are we allowed to indulge in certain like feast days, and is it incorrect for us to do that?
Feasting.
Yeah. But on special occasions like...
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, he's our acharya, but he set the example of feeding the devotees very nicely on such occasions. Actually, the way it works is that the feast day is not actually Janmashtami. The feast day is Nandotsav, the next day. The feast day is not actually Gaur Purnima. It's the Jagannath Mishra Utsav, the next day. Just practically, after fasting all day, you know, then at midnight you're going to it's a form, and then of course we have Vyas Puja the next day, so you're going to chow down, stuff up and all of that at 1 o'clock in the morning, and then the next day you're going to rise bright and early. It doesn't really work, but even apart from that, to fast till late in the day or midnight and then feast is not a very healthy or practical program. The actual program is that there's fasting and then there's a little breakfast. It's called anukalp, Ekadashi prasadam, light prasadam, some fruit, some Ekadashi items. Just to break the fast. You've been starving, so now you don't have to starve anymore. You take a little something. After starving all day, now if you try to go from to you're going to turn yourself inside out. So it's not, although it has become a traditional ISKCON program, it's not actually the most conducive to good health or even good spiritual advancement. The actual program is a little light breaking of the fast. And then the next day, there's a big feast.
So on the next day, we can...
The next day.
That's what I was
then, now, the next day, that's the next question. Prabhupada one time said, you know, they've given up everything else. Let them take nice Krishna prasad. That also, of course, you'll see practically what's too much. When you regret it afterwards and you're suffering and moaning, and then you can understand that you really took more than what was required. But short of that, to eat nicely, to honor the different preparations offered to Krishna and appreciate how so many preparations have been made by the devotees with love and devotion and offered to the Lord, and to Krishna Bhadadoyamoy, appreciate how merciful Krishna is, that he's given nice Krishna prasad. That's authorized for us. That we can do. You may find it helpful when there's 108 preparations to have some strategy to figure out in advance that to sample each one of those 108 preparations in a substantial quantity is not possible for the embodied living. So you may want to figure out what your strategy is beforehand, how you're going to deal with all of that, whether you're only going to take some preparations or you're going to take a tiny, tiny amount of many preparations, or what you're going to do. You may find that some preparations really don't work for you anyway. You know, they're hard for some people. This preparation or that preparation may be difficult for digestion. So you see what works for you, what's healthy. The heavier preparations you make take less. According to Ayurveda, there's two ways of eating heavy. One is to eat heavy things, halava, cheese preparations, jackfruit. There are some preparations, fried things, that are naturally heavy. And just to take even a little of those heavy preparations is heavy eating. You know, if you have a good full bowl of halwa, well, that's enough to put many men out of commission quickly. So even small quantities of heavy items can mean heavy eating. And then large quantities of light items can also be heavy eating. If you may be taking just very light items, but if you're taking 80 of them, or you're taking 10 of them in big quantities, that's also heavy eating. Large quantities of light items or small quantities of heavy items. So you want to make a plan. How I'm going to survive this feast. How I'm going to relish, honor the Krishna prasadam without being on the boards for the next 3 days without being laid out.
Well, Srila Prabhupada once said, if you eat fruit, you cannot overeat.
If you eat fruit, you cannot overeat. Generally true. It's, of course, there's where there's a will, there's a way if you want to overeat. And some fruits are particularly heavy. Avocado is very heavy fruit. Other fruits can be a little heavy also in quantities, mango and so on. But generally, yes, you go on eating fruit, you're not going to be in much difficulty. Fruit is one of those things you can take a lot of. Yes. But Prabhupada didn't just live on fruit. That's also one way of fasting. Just take fruit. On Ekadashi, if you like, if you don't want to fast completely, you may say, well, today I'll just take fruit.
Or you may
just take Ekadashi prasad. Small quantities, or according to your own discretion, what will be good for you, what you can do, what's reasonable, and what's helpful. But some austerity on Ekadashi is good. Something else? And it's not just not eating, but chanting Hare Krishna. That's the real idea, that if I eat less, I can chant more.
Raja, I've heard this, but I haven't read it in the Veda days of the Prabhupada's teaching. There's someone was saying that Prabhupada fed to some fruit, which is like gold in the morning and lead at night. So we should have
fruit is like gold in the morning?
And lead at night. So which fruit was he referring to?
I never heard that. According to Ayurveda, juice is like that. Juice in the morning is very good. Juice at night is not very good. That I've seen in Ayurveda. But I never saw the, as you said, it's not in the Veda base, and I haven't seen it either, that fruit at night is like lead. Fruit is light anytime. I've never heard that from Prabhupada elsewhere.
Was Prabhupada on the planet when they used to have this Galaptiman eating contest?
He was.
Did he approve it or disapprove of it?
He didn't participate.
He said it's bad for the devotees, they shouldn't do that for
him. I never heard anything about it. I don't know that Srila Prabhupada was asked his opinion in the matter. I think devotees just went ahead without consulting. Well, I can't comment on what Srila Prabhupada knew about.
So we shouldn't have those questions.
I know the scores were not reported in the Sankirtan.
We could have a competition who eats the least amount of kulab.
Yeah. That's the hard competition.
Whoever you speak to, even if it's the most simple person, if you just tell him, don't teach Krishna consciousness, just tell him the difference between the soul and the material body, they actually become very amazed. Yes. There was one little stationery shop on the border when I was coming to Zambia. I was distributing to the owner of the shop, and he heard this thing about, he actually took a book called The Laws of Material Nature. And he was so intrigued about this, you're not the body, you're spirit soul, that there were customers standing outside, and he said, come here, listen to what this man is saying, Everybody came to the shop and I had to repeat this thing about, and they took books along too, you know. That's the wonderful thing about Srila Prabhupada's books today. Anybody can understand them, even the most uneducated person, just like Haridas Thakur came from a Muslim family. So even those people that those African people that we saw that were so uneducated, they actually became attracted to Prabhupada's teaching. I've also found that I had to spend 5 hours on the board there before, five or 6 hours on that board there, and I had some books there. And of course, in that part of Africa, if you've got a white body, it's like very unusual, you know? And everywhere I go, they sort of look at me and they say, they would just say to me, Shaolin monk. I think they've been watching too many kung fu movies in that part of Africa. And they used to say to me, Mzungu, Mzungu, Mzungu. Mzungu means white man, you know. And then I just used to stand in the middle, I used to say, Hare Krishna. And they used to look at me first, they couldn't understand, and I'd say, Hare Krishna. And you know, African people are just naturally attracted to rhythm, you know. And the whole crowd will start chanting Hare, and it actually grew bigger and bigger and bigger. And then I stand in the middle of the crowd, and then I hold up the laws of material nature, and one printed in India with the head of the. And they were just, I actually thought they were going to, like, they were actually amazed by this. So what I'm trying to say, Srila Prabhupada's books, anybody can take them. It doesn't matter who it is.
Hare Krishna Mazungu with books. Powerful. Okay. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.